Okay, ask Catherine. Good morning. I'm a subscriber, Slary, and would like to know if you can help me with a question I have regarding. I believe in the distant past, Catherine talked about how it was possible to have an IRA account and put physical gold into that account. I lost this information and would like to ask you if you could help me retrieve the info. Thank you very much. Franklin Sanders' most recent recommendation is New Dimension IRA in Colorado. I've sent an email to check and see if he has an update on that, but you can find their website, and there's a great deal of information about how to go about, you know, sort of the process. If you go back into the precious metals market reports with Franklin, we have several where we discuss the process of how to buy and hold physical precious metals in an IRA account. Catherine, first let me say I've been a fan of yours for many years, but recently became a Solari subscriber. You have great data, and I'm enjoying it. I read your Solari core concepts and noted that I couldn't find any reference to place-based accounting. I always liked that concept and thought of it as a core concept of Solari. I worked for Apple for 25 years and retired in 2012. I've been thinking about trying to create some sort of open-source place-based accounting based on census tracts. I live in Glendale, California, and hope to meet you if you were ever in this area. That is a great idea. I hope you do that. Check out our recent Solari report, Unpacking Your Local Financial Ecosystem. You're right. I think that would be a great addition to Solari Core Concepts, and I will make sure to ask to put that in the next time we update that. I really appreciate your recommendation. Good evening, Catherine. I've been subscribing for about a year, and I am impressed with the quality topics, guests, and the perspectives you provide. Is there any problem with sharing links from your website with people I think should be potential members? I appreciate your asking that. Here's what you can share. First of all, it's fine to share anything with your immediate family, so feel free to do that. In the left-hand side of the website, there's an image of a chef tasting something, and it says get a taste. And if you click on that, it will take you to lots of the Solari reports and other materials we've made available for free. One of the reasons being, in fact, that subscribers want things that they can share to give people a taste. And of course, we have our video every week called Just a Taste, which is up on Vimeo and YouTube. And that's another great way to sort of introduce them. Finally, every Christmas we have something called Give the Gift, and we invite subscribers to give a month subscription to one person. So you'll, you know, if come early December, you're going to be invited to give the gift. So that's another way of giving people access. What I would ask is that you not share anything that is subscriber only. So I'm hoping those selections will give you plenty of options. Then you continue, I'm curious if you have any insight into Canadian oil industry. There seems to be not much interest in investment given the current prices and political climate here. I've been employed in the trades for many years, and I personally see a dying industry with a low possibility of a recovery, assuming the status quo ensues. Your information on future alternative energy production is very interesting. Do you believe future technology is relevant to this current situation and pricing? Yes, I very much believe it is. Then you continue, I hope you plan to schedule a lunch in Alberta, Canada. I'm eager to meet other Solari members as well. Okay, we'll put Alberta in the mix. In fact, one of the things I was hoping to do in 2018 is do a drive across Canada from, I want to start in Halifax because I've never been to Halifax, but sort of go Toronto to Vancouver and stop and do a whole bunch of lunches with subscribers. So I will put Alberta in the mix for that sort of road trip that I'm contemplating. Here's what I think. If you look at the oil producers globally, you have many different countries and budgets very deeply dependent on oil revenues, and they have to pump to meet their budgets. And if you look at the speed and intensity with which they continue to pump, it's very deflationary to the market. Then you add on top of that the sort of gains being made with renewable technologies or the breakthrough technologies. And I think we're looking at a picture which is very deflationary for oil prices for quite some time. Now, I say that, and in North America, there is a real push not only for North America to be self-sufficient, but also to be an exporter. And so for certain parts of the industry, so if you talk to people who do equipment and sort of tools related, they're dealing with great volumes and the business is great for them. If your part of the business is dependent on prices rising, then I say the probability of getting any kind of significant increases in the future are diminishing, and what the technology policies will be is very fluid. But if they allow the kind of improvements we're seeing in renewable and they allow breakthrough energy out, then you're just seeing tremendous deflationary pressures on fossil fuels. Okay, next question. The U.S. selling billions in arms to Saudi Arabia not only sets up the Muslim world to self-destruct, as Dr. Farrell suggests, it also supplies the terrorists Saudi Arabia supports with arms. ISIS anyway, anyone. Southeast Asia is girding for the threat of ISIS that has no national army, no national air force or navy, and no visible means of support. So where do they get all those arms and all that money? Saudi Arabia, maybe? And is the U.S. so determined to make Islam a global enemy to justify the expanding military industrial intelligence complex that we openly arm the richest enabler of Islamic terrorism? The debt welfare warfare model seems to be doubling down, ensuring decades of profitable conflict in which Muslims can kill each other in their own countries. Philippines is the only non-Muslim country already dealing with ISIS. Duterte may know the role the rogue CIA plays in the spread of this doomed form of Islam. Let me just interject. I suspect he's getting ISIS because he tried to shut down a highly lucrative drug trade. He continues, he snubs the U.S. president, carries out a brutal crackdown he knows is the only way to stop the cabal use of the lunatic Islamic fringe to punish anyone who does not toe the U.S. line. The U.S. is still being used as the global bully because we are so addicted to the profits and jobs of the military-industrial intelligence complex, and the neocons and the Israeli lobby still call the shots. How do we kick that addiction? By removing the head of the snake, the masters of the world must be taken out, an impossible dream, yes, as long as the American people accept the bread and circus life and being fleeced in every imaginable way. In my opinion, only a national or global crisis will shake the people awake out of the entrainment stupor, and that crisis has to be a monster. We have quietly accepted coup d'etat with a public assassination of our president and obvious cover-up, and God knows how many acknowledged corruptions and outright thefts of public money. We truly have become a nation of sheep. I would say, you know, scripture says there's life and death in the power of the tongue. And I really, while I get very frustrated about entrainment and mind control, I don't think it is a good idea to talk about. Let's not talk ourselves down. So let's talk ourselves up. One of my favorite preachers always says, speak life into your situation. I also think things are more complicated if you look at the invisible technology and surveillance that's used to manipulate and manage people. We're up against very powerful invisible forces and weaponry. It's very sophisticated. It's very capable. I've dealt with it now for many, many decades, and I think the story is a lot more complex than it looks, and I think it's very easy to blame the victim. And so let's not go there. The much hope for disclosure will not bring us to our senses. It will be weakened and played by the masters it condemns. I don't know that. I'm not into making them out to be all-powerful. They have too many tools to use for this. They will anticipate every possible damaging revelation and turn it to their own ends. I don't necessarily agree. We need a shock to wake us up. I think there are a lot of us who are awake. It will hurt. I see no other way to you. You and I see this very differently. I think there are multiple options, and you don't need everybody awake. You need 5 to 10% of the people who are awake and are willing to act. Change comes from leadership. It doesn't come from a kumbaya of 100% of us. So I think we need that 5 to 10% to get to the point where they're willing to find each other and take action, and that's what I see happening. Catherine, at the recent International UFO Convention in Las Vegas where Richard Dolan spoke, I saw a fantastic documentary, Packing for Mars, brilliantly written and directed, cogent, concise, and easily digested. The director definitely covers the most important issues, questions in our modern world that is covered, that are covered on the Salieri Report. However, he doesn't sell. He simply tells the story, allowing the audience to come to its own conclusions. A must-see for seekers of truth that can't find guidance via mainstream media. Thought-provoking without being aggressive or preaching. Definitely worth seeing. Wanted to know if you'd like to promote it on the next Salieri Report. I spoke with the director about letting you see the film for free. I said Catherine Austin Fitz can watch the film here. So you sent me a link, and I will absolutely try and watch it as soon as I can. Packing for Mars is available on Amazon for those interested. Keep thriving, Catherine. Thanks. I will definitely take a look. Hi, Catherine. I'm a big fan of yours and a subscriber to your Salieri Reports. Years back, Hazel Henderson was the one who first alerted me to you and your work. I so appreciate who you are and all that you have been doing. I'm curious what you think of the credibility of Susan Lindauer, if she is for real. Her information is hugely explosive. I did a search on your subscriber site to see if you reported on her revelations, but didn't find anything. Specifically, I urge you to listen to this interview with her if you have not heard it. And then she sent a link. I absolutely have it on my list to read or watch some of her work. I just haven't had a chance to yet. A related question. Are you familiar with the work of Dr. Jane McGonigal? Her book, Reality is Broken, shows how online multiplayer games can change the world. It's a book well worth reading and reporting on. Actually, I've read a review of it, and her book is in my stack of 200 must-read immediately books in my den, which unfortunately is growing faster than I'm reading. Here's how I sense these two themes could be related. After watching the video interview with Susan, link above, I ran that through my biocomputer, and that got me to thinking something like, quote, help create a conspiracy chronology could be a really fun multiplayer game doing along the lines of the real-life game reported on by McGonigal in Chapter 11 of Reality is Broken. Chapter 11 chronicles the 2009 game that was created and publicized by The Guardian in England to sort through over a million receipts submitted by British MPs for reimbursement. The Guardian hired a game designer and invited the public to participate in piecing together these receipts that had most inconveniently been saved on a server as images with lots of info redacted, thus making it impossible to sort the receipts electronically into various categories. The online game public, tens of thousands, jumped in with gusto and very quickly led to something like 28 MPs resigning and many more having to pay back very large sums of money for illegal charges. The whole activity was a huge success. How does this Bust Your MP game tie in to Susan Lindauer and others who are called conspiracy theorists by the mainstream press, etc.? We know the CIA deliberately created the term conspiracy theory and conspiracy theorists after the JFK assassination to debunk explanations of events that differed from the mainstream story. I would point out at that time Jim Mars was on their tail. So I think that there could be an incredible benefit in creating a multiplayer game to build a chronology of those alternative explanations. Gamers would, I submit, find this an extremely engaging multiplayer game, and the chronology, too, would also be extremely edifying. So-and-so goes public charging XYZ on July 1, is called to testify in court on July 20, and is murdered, quote, commit suicide on July 18th, to give a random but not unreasonable example. Anyway, Catherine, I thought you might find this idea interesting, and perhaps you would have some thoughts on what publication or organization might be interested in sponsoring such a game. All the best. That's a great idea. I will endeavor to move her book to the top of the pile and see if I can't get into it. But I think there are tremendous opportunities in this area. Dear Catherine, I finished reading 9/11, The Big Lie by Thierry, I think it's Masson. He notes that a commission to evaluate the organization and planning of U.S. security in outer space was established and funded in 2000. It also published its report in January of 2001. It appears that as early as January 2001, the Bush administration was already planning space dominance. Do you think that this may have also been one of the many forces involved in 9/11? Yes, absolutely. Masson's book is replete with many factors that would implicate the administration's complicity in the 9/11 event. I think space and space funding were critical parts of what happened on 9/11. Also, mind control. There was a rush to get all the cell tower network in place, and there was a huge build out coming up into 9/11, and it's funny, a subscriber network member who was a project manager for towers was under tremendous pressure to get towers up as fast as possible for the year before. And then suddenly I got an email from him in August 2001, and he says, "We've just all been laid off." And I said, "Uh-oh, something really big is about to happen." And sure enough. Okay, next question. Perhaps this woman is another Slayer hero heroine. And then they, a long description of a great article from The Intercept about a woman named Van Strum who really did a remarkable job of documenting sort of outrageous behavior by the chemical industry. So I published that as soon as you sent it in, and I very much appreciate that. Hi, Catherine. Uluru is booked and also very expensive. As a Christian, could I organize another meetup in Australia? What format would you envision? I have Christian friends in the agricultural space and alternative currencies. We're doing 2 weeks and two groups in Uluru, and because of that, I don't want to commit to do any more meetings, but I will try and have a lunch in Sydney. So I would love to see if that that could work for any of the people you'd like to invite. Dear Catherine, I always make time for what you have to say and would appreciate any comment on alleged financial reset that happened in April, May last year. I don't know anything about it. If you want me to take a look, just send me a link and I'll take a look. There's a woman portrayed as a World Bank lawyer who kept screenshots of the action leading up to maturity in 2015, a bond funded after World War II for humanitarian projects. I think you're referring to Karen Hudis, who had been a lawyer at the World Bank. I've not found her to be a useful source, so I just don't follow her work. Anyway, if you want me to take a look at what you're referring to in April, May of 2016, just send me a link and I'd be delighted to take a look. Dear Catherine and Dr. Farrell, I just heard you state that it's time to take the gloves off, and I could not agree more. Within minutes after listening to your excellent second quarter wrap-up, I came across the following. It is sober, to say the least. I hope it helps you design your strategy for dealing with those who are described in this letter to President Trump. And then there's a link to an article I posted a while back. It's a memorandum to President Trump on domestic U.S. torture programs. It's basically about people who are being targeted with electronic harassment. It's a serious problem. I regularly post videos and links on the problem. I just posted a new one today of a gentleman who used to work for the government and is being electronically harassed. And it's got a fairly good background to sort of define and be able to describe what's happening. Next question. Catherine, last week I got a very positive response from the Director of Economic Development. He will check out what you're saying about opportunities at the county level. I hope it bears fruit. I'm the guy who keeps asking the question, why should America be the grid again? There's a good interview on The Intercept between Jeremy Scahill and Alfred McCoy. McCoy spends an hour tracing the history of empire, much the way you trace it, but from a different angle. At the end of the interview, Scahill asks the question, and the answer is illuminating. McCoy spends a few minutes telling us the unipolar world needs to be preserved because we are better than them. Maybe that's why Chomsky and progressives felt Clinton was the lesser evil. I am a simple village idiot watching this global debate being played out as if we are pawns in a game beyond our control. As you conclude on the health debate, the bad news is that we are on our own, and the good news is that we are on our own. On that, I'm in total agreement. P.S. I wrote to Scahill and suggested you have a friendly debate with him. He could represent why the unipolar world needs to be preserved, and you could debate a case for the multipolar world. Hi, Catherine. Just wanted to give you an update. I'm here in India doing 30 days of Panchakarma, an ancient cleanse based on the 5,000-year-old healing tradition known as Ayurveda. Anyway, I wanted to give you an update on the whole cashless India propaganda. They have replaced the 1,000 rupee note with a $520,000 rupee note. I got two 2,000 rupee notes, one from a friend and one at the ATM. So it appears that the cashless India, as far as I can see here, is fake news. I was so surprised when I got my first 2,000 rupee note when I exchanged some US dollars with a friend. When he handed me the 2,000 rupee note, I looked at him and thought he was trying to rip me off. I said, I thought there were no big bills. You guys were cashless. He just gave me a look at as if, give me a break, Greg. So there you go. Just wanted to give you an update. I'm afraid the news of the demise of cash here in India has been greatly exaggerated. Sounds to me like what they were trying to do is sort of knock out a whole pool of savings, which of undeclared funds, and trying to get it sort of taxed and in the system. Dear Catherine, anyway, I had a thought as I listened to this week's interview with Dr. Farrell. You were discussing the dinner in Louisville, and I began to wonder, what are the odds of a subscriber lunch in the Midwest, say the Kansas City, St. Louis, Omaha, Wichita, Heartland area? Is the subscriber base in this region enough to justify the effort? I understand if it isn't. This area seemingly neither a hotbed of finance, Mr. Buffett notwithstanding, nor of alternative perspectives. Still, from an entirely selfish perspective, such an opportunity would be outstanding, and should Kansas City be a viable option, I would wholeheartedly volunteer for organizing the logistic efforts required to make it happen. I really appreciate that. We will put that on the list. And I would also tell anyone else who's interested in sort of helping the logistics. It's a matter of identifying the restaurant and helping us figure out sort of how to organize it. It's really about intelligence more than anything. And maybe going and talking to the restaurant is involved. Anyway, so if you're willing to help us with the logistics of doing a luncheon, let customer service know and we'll make sure to have your place on our list. I would love to do a series of lunches in the Heartland. It's really a question of travel schedule and when we're coming through for multiple reasons. Good morning, Catherine. My question concerns pension funds. Clearly, they are severely underfunded and cannot meet current obligations and payouts, and big changes and broken promises are already happening. So my questions are, when will it hit the fan? Who will they blame? What will the backlash from pensioners be? What are their rights? What will government do to increase taxes to cover pensions like CalPERS and CalSTRS? California has already introduced major gas tax and registration tax hikes in order to pay for road improvements. Read bait and switch. What will the overall effects be on the economy? CalPERS and CalSTRS owe pensions to almost 3 million recipients. I don't have a dog directly in this race, but I think it will be a major problem for all of us. My sister, however, is counting on her CalPERS pension as a major part of her retirement, and I'm making plans to supplement her income if when the promises made to her are broken. I'm going to be doing the next annual wrap-up, so the one we publish in January 2018, on the pension system. I'll be taking a deeper look. I may be able to handle some of your questions then. However, this is very granular. You have to analyze the situation on a bottom-up basis. So, if you're looking at state and local pension funds, then the fiscal and financial situation of the state is very pertinent. And you have to look at the funding levels, the governance system, the laws. If it's corporate, it's very different. So, there are many different particulars. So this is not going to happen as one shared problem. You know, the Social Security system will be one shared problem in the United States, but and this is also a major issue throughout the G7 nations. So this is the whole developed world has got this problem. And then you add a PS. The Solari community is a return to sanity for me. You always peel away the BS, the fluff, the deceptions, and the partisan factor in every Solari report. I love your insights and perspective. It is real and human, and I feel privileged to be a subscriber. This is like our own virtual Galt's Gulch. For those of you who haven't read Atlas Shrugged, that's a reference from Atlas Shrugged. And I'm happy to be home again. Keep on, girl. Well, I'm glad to have you back, Rebel Commander. That's Rebel Commander is my nickname for this particular subscriber. He's just a really terrific guy. Hi, Catherine. I just came across this article, and then there's a link to an article about the Australian Constitution. In the Age newspaper, in the print version, the title is "An Archaic Constitution is Holding Us Back." The main specific complaint they make about Australia's constitution that it is that it disallows candidates with dual citizenship standing for parliament. Very interesting considering recent discussions on the Solari report. Do we here in Australia need to be as concerned as U.S. citizens regarding attempts to mess with our constitution? My guess is absolutely. I'm not an expert on the Australian constitution, but I'm going to start asking and asking, doing a little research. Then you say, what specifically do we need to look at in order to understand how high the stakes are? I think what you want to understand is, if you were to allow dual citizenship in Parliament, who exactly would start running? Anyway, but I'll start doing a little research, see what I can find.